From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. When you're a United States Senator and chair of the powerful Senate Finance Committee, you're often running from hearing to hearing throughout the corridors of power in Washington, D.C. When you also happen to be Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, you're back home in the state running, or rather driving, from one town hall to the next meeting with constituents. He has, after all, kept up his pledge to visit every Oregon county during his terms in office. Today on the show, the senator stops by to talk about a large to-do list on his plate, and he'll tell you about the issues he's involved in, from trying to help curb the problem of fentanyl on our streets, to fixing the myriad problems at the Roseburg VA, to sharing remembrances of the late, great Portland trailblazer, Bill Walton. All that's next on Oregon on the Record. If James Brown was the hardest working man in show business, Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, who routinely visits each county in the state multiple times, may be the hardest working legislator in the nation. We catch up with the senator on the show and talk about the issues he's working on behalf of Oregonians. Senator Ron Wyden, always good to see you. How are you, sir?
Thanks for having me back.
Before we talk about some of the important issues you've been working on, I did want to ask you about legendary Portland trailblazer who passed this week, Bill Walton. Maybe some thoughts or some stories or some remembrances you might have about the big redhead.
Bill Walton was a person who had an incredible gift for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And he had an even more incredible, unquenchable enthusiasm for life.
Yeah.
And when Bill came to town, and he came to town a lot, he was here and broadcasting and things of that nature, he'd get out of the car in his green and yellow tie-dyed shirt, and you knew we were going to have a really good time. And what I remember especially about Bill Walton is that he and I, for years on end, were on the road. I was coming back, having town meetings, mm-hmm. holding hearings, this kind of thing. And Bill was broadcasting and the like. And we would often bump into each other from 60 or 70 feet away in an airport. Bill was 6'11", and he would see me. I'm 6'4". He's in the NBA Hall of Fame. I was a college scrub. He would see me. And he'd say, hi, Ron, top of his lungs. Everybody was turning around. And then we'd get close and he'd be talking about a bill or something on healthcare or the environment or peace or something like that. And everybody laughed. And he just had such an enthusiasm for practically everything. And I would invariably tease him about how I was there for the 74 game in Mack Court, where the Ducks beat UCLA. I was in law school, and you know, I was living in the dorms. I packed up a bunch of sandwiches in a big bag, and off we went. And what a day!
Yeah, yeah. I think I've never met the man, but I know that he was so learned and so you know, an intelligent athlete, student athlete, and he could talk about so many different issues for a long time.
He was very well read.
Mm-hmm.
He always had a book with him, and he was always thinking about ideas. And you know, we're just never gonna forget him. And you know, I'll be saying more about it over the next few days. I've already proposed that there be a statue of Bill outside MoDa.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Obviously, brought the city its only championship. So certainly he touched many lives and will be missed. Well, let's get on to, you know, the things you've been working on. And so I wanted to talk first about, you know, obviously you're the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, and I believe you just held a very critical hearing about the scourge of fentanyl. And you talked about a lot of different steps and things that you'd like to see the federal government do. Go ahead and talk about what you're working on.
There are especially two pieces to the puzzle. Senate Finance Committee has very expansive obligations with respect to international commerce, and we've been cracking down on the source of fentanyl, particularly coming from China, but there are a lot of other issues issues ahead. There's some transshipment problems where they might close off the China option and look at, you know, Vietnam or India or another country. And I want to come down as hard as possible on the cartels, on the money launderers. We've got to have tough sanctions. That's a big part of it.
Sure.
What we looked at last week were the health implications of fentanyl. And in particular, I see a real opportunity for medication-assisted treatment, particularly without opioids. And I think we've got to force these insurance companies to stop using prior authorization denied treatment.
Explain that, the prior authorization
treatment. Prior authorization is not a problem only in fentanyl. It's a problem in many areas, and it's a flagrant insurance company abuse. We're going after them, and we'll have more to say about more comprehensive remedies. But in the case of fentanyl, if an insurance company denies coverage here, a person can have very serious health problems and possibly even die.
Yeah, yeah. I know you've viewed challenges that we have with addiction issues throughout generations, and certainly every generation has its a particular drug that's extremely dangerous. Fentanyl seems to be at the very top of the list for
people. No question about it. I think Oregonians know Nancy and I are older parents. We have twins that are 16. And no matter where they are, they want to go out with friends and they want to play basketball and the like. And I see him walking out the door, and I go, "Not so fast, folks." And my son always says, "All right, here comes the lecture about fentanyl." And I say, "Yeah, you're going to get it again, because you can't take chances with this. You can't go somewhere and take something from a friend. You know, basically, you can have a Coke out of a can, but, you know, that's about the only thing you should be taken."
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We're speaking with Senator Ron Wyden here on Oregon on the Record. You know, kind of an interesting, tangent, though, which I think is interesting, too, is you just, praise the Biden administration for rescheduling cannabis. And I believe you have a bill that you're looking at that might lay out new regulations. Talk a little bit about that, because that's a very different issue.
I'd like not just to reschedule. I'd like to deschedule altogether.
Yeah.
Because I think it's time to set back the days of really excessive punishments and come up with some sensible kinds of policies. And I'm concerned about, for example, small businesses. One of the good things here, we're going to be able to get rid of 280E, a part of regulatory policy, and it's very unfair to folks, because basically the small cannabis person can't get the same tax incentives everybody else gets, and I've long wanted to change that.
Well, and certainly being a senator for Oregon, and Oregon has been kind of a leader in this decriminalization of cannabis. I imagine when you're on Capitol Hill, you probably have an opportunity to talk with your colleagues about, the sky didn't fall when our state here legalized cannabis.
Well, that's right, and Congressman Blumenauer and others make the point that in some respects it looks like youth use is actually going down because there's a regulatory framework.
Yeah, excellent point. You've also talked a little bit about this idea, we're kind of staying in sort of this idea of healthcare in a broad sense, but I do want to talk about, your efforts, leading efforts to sort of expand and protect rural healthcare. That's such a huge issue. And obviously in our state, it's not just Portland, it's not just Eugene and Springfield and Salem. There's a lot of rural areas that need that kind of protection, doesn't it?
And we really saw it highlighted in Baker City, where St. Al's, the big hospital, had been there for 120 years. It's bought up by one of the big outfits, and all of a sudden they're on the road. And our hearing made it clear that in these areas, like, maternity services, we're looking at becoming a maternity desert, not just in rural Oregon, but in our country. And I announced that the committee, under my chairmanship, is going to look at targeted ways to increase reimbursement, while at the same time making sure these big outfits can't just take the money and run.
Yeah, yeah. Here in Eugene, I mean, we lost our hospital here, and it's Springfield's not that far away. But boy, I tell you, you know, in rural America and in rural Oregon, the idea of losing healthcare, I mean, your options may be, you know, a 2-hour drive away.
If you don't have rural healthcare, you can't have rural life.
Yeah.
That simple.
Yeah, and certainly telemedicine is a huge part of that as well, isn't it?
Well, one of the few good things that came out of COVID is the Trump administration called me, and Orrin Hatch and I had written a law on chronic care, and we had a major piece on telemedicine, and the Trump administration asked me, would it be okay if they used the telemedicine provisions of our law? And I said, are you kidding me? You know, we're not going to agree on everything, but
sure.
The fact that you want to use this for telemedicine, I'm in, and it made a big difference during COVID.
Sure, and then, of course, you know, you've been championing the backbone of telemedicine, which is rural broadband as well. Talk a little bit about the efforts that you've done and sort of the progress made there.
One big breakthrough was we were getting shortchanged because the Commerce Department in particular was counting parts of our state as getting service when they didn't.
Yeah.
And I had 3 meetings with Gina Raimondo, the Secretary of Commerce. We got that changed. And, you know, I've just been having town hall meetings in rural Oregon. And you've got a lot of stretches of the state that need service, and they're going to be able to get it with this.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And a huge grant that went forward where Oregon got a lot of money
hundreds of millions.
Exactly.
Hundreds of millions of dollars as a result of being able to change this.
You know, I do want to talk about a town south of us, the Roseburg area, and specifically the Roseburg VA. Talk about what you're doing there, because I think a lot of people probably here may not know about the issue.
Well, Roseburg has a large veterans population, and we've worked very closely with them for years. And in mid-May, the Office of Inspector General released a report documenting concerns with the program. And in particular, they highlighted serious issues with understaffing, problems with electronic health records. They need to modernize their system, and inadequate suicide prevention efforts. And I'm pushing the VA leadership now to tackle these problems. And we are prepared to say, look, these Inspector General recommendations are serious business, but we've been getting more resources to the VA and creating incentives and flexibilities to address staffing challenges, and the VA's got to step up and get this done in Roseburg.
Yeah, and I imagine it's not just Roseburg, right? I mean, I'm sure there are lots of communities like Roseburg that are having some of the same challenges.
That's my take.
Yeah.
I serve on the Finance Committee. I'm not on the Veterans Committee.
Sure.
I do hear this from my colleague, Senator Tester, for example, in Montana, is really making these issues a priority. And we've made it possible for communities to get additional resources. The Roseburg program has been understaffed for a long time. They got to step up and deal with it now.
Yeah. And then do you have an idea of maybe how long that could take?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they got to start making changes quickly. I mean, this question of electronic health record modernization, you know, you can't, pretend we're in a new century here.
Yeah.
Different time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to kind of stay on this idea of like health records and digital records and whatnot, because I know that you've also joined with Senator Merkley, which you often do on many things. And you're talking about, you know, kind of this issue of automakers sharing customer data that seems to be somewhat problematic, and maybe they're not living up to the promises that they've made to consumers. Talk a little bit about that.
Today, a modern car is essentially a computer on wheels.
Indeed.
And I've been particularly concerned that when the Federal Trade Commission forced these automobile companies to come in and say they're not going to give a customer's data out, the companies went ahead and did it anyway.
Hmm.
So I'm pushing the Federal Trade Commission to bring these people in again, and we've got to make sure that this time they follow through. Here's what I'm particularly worried about.
Sure.
If a woman is driving from one state to another, and the state she ends up in, as a prosecutor who is not sympathetic to a woman's right to choose, that prosecutor might insist on getting, you know, personal data about where that woman is going and use it against her.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly, you know, data privacy is such a huge issue. And I know you've been on the forefront of that issue. And, you know, last time we even talked about some of the serious concerns you had for something like TikTok. Give us an update on sort of what's happening there, because that's been such a huge issue.
Legislation passed. It wouldn't have been the bill that I would have written. It was part of the big foreign policy,
sure,
you know, bill. And I do think that it's important to have TikTok operated by American interests.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to tell your listeners, I do not support in any way, shape, or form letting Steve Mnuchin run this, because he was Treasury Secretary in the Trump administration, had access to all kinds of classified information, and I don't support that. But I do support having American interests control it. We ensure that there are privacy rights and First Amendment rights, and that this is something that the users of TikTok will feel comfortable with.
Okay. Switching gears entirely from cars and TikTok to up in the air, I know you've been working on sort of the FAA Reauthorization Act, and you issued a statement about some concerns with that. Talk a little bit about that as well.
Well, I still think that this is an area where we have seen such extraordinary growth in flying.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to do more to make investments in critical facilities. It's hard because a lot of communities will resist it, so you have to really do what we try to do with town hall meetings and work out arrangements that you can find some common ground in. But I think this is just the beginning of a set of challenges to make sure that we have modern airfare and modern opportunities to use air for travel.
Yeah. And then, of course, safety is sometimes an issue as well. And I imagine that
we've known with Boeing in particular,
sure,
what that means. And I fly on Alaska a lot, and if I can, I always would like an exit row aisle for the extra legroom, and my seat isn't far from where that that plane had something that's now viral.
Exactly. Let's talk, too, about, I know you've made efforts to sort of, you've called on your Senate colleagues to pass a bipartisan tax bill. Maybe give us an update on where that's at, and specifically around, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, that kids and small business can't wait for Senate Republicans to act. Talk a little bit about that.
I got together with Jason Smith, the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in mm-hmm. the House. He's my counterpart as I chair the Senate Finance Committee, and we decided that we had an opportunity to help kids, particularly with an expanded child tax credit, and also help our small businesses with a research and development credit. We added additional elements in terms of low-income housing and disaster coverage. We got 357 votes in the House of Representatives. You normally can't get 357 votes over there to order a piece of pie. And now we're trying to get it through the Senate, and I believe we will get it through, but some Senate Republicans are saying, oh, we don't need to do it now. We'll be in control in 2025. We'll have the White House. We'll have the Senate. We'll have the House. We'll be in charge of, you know, of everything. And I've just said, you better get out and listen to people, as I have. Is, you know, we've got small businesses who have said point blank, if we don't get the research and development tax credit now, we're not even going to be around in 2025 because we're trying to compete with China. We need this money to make payroll. And so I'm going to keep pushing to make sure we get the vote. I think the debate is now when we'll get the vote. And I believe we've got the votes to pass it in the Senate.
Okay. I know you've done a lot for wildland firefighters, and we're getting into, you know, the summer season where conflagrations can prop up at any time. I just talk a little bit about that.
Well, one of the most recent efforts is to have more in the way of prescribed burns.
Okay.
And what that means is you go in there when the weather is cooler,
mm-hmm.
and you make sure that you're looking at the current science and the like, and you control the burn, which is a way to get rid of some of those hazardous fuels that piled up and reduce the threat,
sure,
that you'd have in the summer. Because in the summer, if the hazardous fuels have just been piling up and you have a lightning strike or somebody drops a match, all of a sudden you got an inferno on your hand.
Okay. You know, want to take the opportunity because you're in studio to ask, you know, you obviously see things a lot of us don't get to see. Where are you on how inflation is going and sort of where, you know, the Federal Reserve action on rate cuts? I mean, where are you on how that's going?
The Fed has sort of said, for now, we're standing pat.
Okay.
That's their position. And look, there's more to do in terms of inflation, which is why I spend so much time focused on cutting costs. And, you know, I wrote the prescription drug bill so we can negotiate lower costs. I've been working to improve mail service because a lot of our small businesses are waiting around trying to get orders and the like because of the mail service. So this is a time for legislators to look at ways to, you know, cut costs in every possible way. And my hope is, and I think Jerome Powell, you know, has done a responsible job here. You know, he's got the job of taking the punch bowl out when you need a little bit of opportunity to grow and create some enthusiasm for opportunities. And then he takes the punch bowl back when he's, you know, concerned that things have gone too far. I think he's done a balanced job. They stood pat a month ago, and we'll see what happens. But I expect him to take, you know, a moderate approach for the rest of the year.
Okay. You mentioned the post office. I know you've had challenges with the Postmaster General, and I saw that you and, again, Senator Merkley were working on an effort to get the post office, and this speaks near and dear to my heart for as a local journalist to help local news organizations that require the post office to get their, you know, newspapers and periodicals out, and you're asking them to do a better job of delivering those important you know, newspapers and at a reasonable cost. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
I call the DeJoy operation DeJoy's Folly, you know, because it looks like they've defied common sense. When I had the press conference a couple of days ago with the mayor of Medford, you know, we talked about all the problems they were having, and people came up to me at the Fred Meyer a little bit afterwards and talked about how they were trying to get a small package from Nevada, and it had done two round trips from Nevada to Portland rather than Nevada to Southern Oregon.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. One last question. You know, 7 months ago we talked at the very beginning of what was happening in Gaza. I did want to ask you if anything you're seeing gives you optimism that, you know, a potential ceasefire or just even a lessening of tensions is even in the near future.
Well, of course, you know, we realize that you've got to find a way to invest the parties in working together and supporting peace, which is why I'm such a strong supporter of a two-state solution. I mean, the reality is, you know, Hamas has a very different agenda than the vast majority of Palestinians. The vast majority of Palestinians don't get up in the morning like Hamas and say, I want to spend my day killing as many Jews as possible. So what I'm trying to do on a daily basis is get as much humanitarian aid in as possible. I haven't agreed with the Biden administration's approach of using this pier or whatever it is, but let's get as much humanitarian aid in as we can. Let's get the hostages out, and let's really push for a two-state solution.
Okay. Senator Ron Wyden, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for
covering
coming
a lot
in.
Of ground.
We did. I ran you around like you're running around at town halls all over the state. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's our show. In case you missed any of this or any other episodes of Oregon on the Record, all the shows are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll hear from leadership at the Eugene Airport about the upcoming summer travel season and what's in store for the flying public. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.